be here, and those of you, maybe this is your first time, we have a new grandbaby that's supposed to have been here already. And the daddy was supposed to leave today for Jordan and Israel and a long trip, and it must not have been God's will he go on that trip. Because I had a text this morning early that nothing's changed, the baby still hasn't come, but Linda does regret missing being here, and we were here 2 years ago. And again, we know so many of you, we feel like you're, and I mean this seriously, you're our friends. There's, in my opinion, there's nothing as great as knowing you're saved and serving the Lord together. And we are together. We heard a great Sunday school lesson this morning about the local church, and it's not, reaching the world with the gospel is not the job of one person or one church, but we can all do it together. And I'm the old guy here, been at it a long time. Last Tuesday finished 49 years of preaching the gospel, most of that in other countries. Linda and I lived a year and a half in France, studied French 8 hours a day, lived in a home with a French family for 6 months, and then went to they told us it was a French-speaking country in Africa, and not one neighbor we had spoke French. We had to learn another language, and we did speak French all the time, but we spoke Wolof, still speak Wolof, but lived in Senegal for 16 years, and then down in the Congo for several, and then pastored for 9 years and taught in a Christian college, and then was Far East director for 10 years. That's weird, I know. Why would you ask an African to be Far East director? But I loved it. Been at it a long time. I'm just saying that. So yeah, see, what I'm going to say to you this morning goes a lot to who I am. And I don't mean that I'm somebody. I have no importance except that I have been God's messenger and ambassador sent out by local churches just like this one. I like to tell mission stories, and I don't just do it to tell stories, but I tell mission stories because I think you need to know what God's doing around the world. And we missionaries, as we talk, we often say the hardest thing for us is to come back to America. Because we get to go out to our place and we get to see people saved in so many places. Last summer I was in Mexico City and Guadalajara and Honduras and Guatemala, and you go down there and you give out a gospel tract to someone and they'll take it and say, "Gracias, Señor," and stand there on the side of the road and read the tract. When's the last time that happened to you in America? Probably not. Well, let me tell you about two, just briefly this morning. I've been telling you stories about Africa and the Far East this week, but let me tell you about two people who've gone to heaven in the last few days. These are names you may never have heard before in your life. One is George Hustis. George Hustis worked down in Brazil with Wycliffe Bible Translators for about 11 years, but then God convicted him or showed him that he really, translating the Bible is important, but that's just part of the job. So in 1969, he joined BIMI as a church planting missionary. They had already been 11 years on the field. And in those days, they were cutting the big road, the Trans-Amazon Highway that went up into the jungle in the Amazon down in Brazil. And George Hustis and his family went up there and they started winning people and still did Bible translation, started churches. And they opened up many of the cities that were built up along that great highway as it went up there. During that time, I don't know all the story, but he fell out of the back of a pickup or a truck and it rolled back over him. Broke his spine in several places. He spent some time recuperating from that, but stayed on the field. And last Wednesday, his funeral was held out in Oklahoma. And the name that you need to hear, George Hustis, God used him. His son Steve is not a young man himself, but Steve, his son, is still on the field in Brazil reaching people for the Lord Jesus. And then this week sometime, the funeral, the memorial service is not set yet, but Geraldine Everett. LT and Geraldine went to Bolivia back in the 60s and started a church out in a smaller town, and then a national pastor was trained and took that church. And they went to Santa Cruz and they started Star of Bethlehem Baptist Church. They won people. They built an auditorium that would seat 300. It wasn't big enough from the beginning. They built another building that would seat 1,000. And Geraldine Everett went to heaven this last week. and her memorial service will be sometime this week. But that work they started has just gone all over Bolivia, people they reached and they trained. So I'm telling you that to say, is it worth taking this time that you all do every year? And it's not the only time here that missions are mentioned and missionaries are mentioned, but is it worth praying and giving and doing what you do? And I'm just saying 10,000 times over, it's worth it. I want you to open your Bibles to 2 Timothy chapter 2, verses 1 and 2. 2 Timothy chapter 2. And I would say my sermon will be short, but I've already told you this week that missionaries lie. It won't be long, all right? Just relax. I won't be long. But I want you to look at these verses with me. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verses 1 and 2. Now, when I say 2 Timothy, you probably don't think missions, do you? I mean, we think about Matthew 28 and Acts 1 and some other great 2 Corinthians 8 and 9, but I believe that 2 Timothy chapter 2, verses 1 and 2 probably give us one of the best synopses of missions anywhere in the Bible. Now, look at the words. Thou therefore, my son, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus, and the things that thou hast learned of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men who shall be able to teach others also. In that last verse there, you have four generations. You see, missions, listen to me carefully. Missions is much more than just winning people to Christ. I'm going to be honest with you, that's the easy part of the job. Missions is not just winning people, but it's winning people and getting them together, just like you have here, in a local assembly, in a local church, and disciple, you can call it whatever you want to, discipling them, teaching them, training them to do. So what happens if the missionary dies? Well, he goes to heaven. But the work of God doesn't stop. And so the missionary goes out, and here's what Paul's writing, the great missionary we heard about this morning from Philippians. Paul, the great missionary, writing to one of those young men, his Timothy, we use that now. I had men when I was pastor, when I was a missionary, that I called, this is my Timothy. In Japan, Ogawa is the pastor of Senri New Town Baptist Church in Japan. He's been the pastor there for many years. He was the Timothy of Dr. Don Sisk. When Dr. Sisk first went to Japan, he was there starting his first church. Senri New Town was a new town. They took a bulldozer and knocked off the top of a mountain and put it out in the ocean and made an island and built a town on it, Senri New Town. And Dr. Sisk was starting his first church in Japan out there, and they were having one of their first services, and they'd passed out flyers and tracts and invited people. And that evening, this young guy, kind of a smart aleck, came in. He said, I'm a university student at the University of Kansai, and I'm not here to hear about the gospel. I have no interest in your religion. I don't want to know anything about Christianity. I'm here to hear English. I'm an English major. I want to hear English. Dr. Sis thought, son, if you knew my Kentucky hillbilly English, you wouldn't want to learn English from me. But he just let him know, I have no interest in what you've got to say, but I want to hear and be able to practice my English. But that night, the first time he ever went to a Christian service, he stood back at the back and he watched those Japanese Christians sing. What a wonderful change in my life has been wrought since Jesus came into my heart and beaming with the joy of God. And it rarely happens in Japan, but the first service he was ever in, he got saved. He was from a well-off family. They kicked him out. But that young man who was saved that night became the Timothy of Dr. Don Sisk. And when Dr. Sisk started that church, Ogawa Sensei became the pastor. And he's been all these long years. It's the largest Baptist church in all of Japan. They run 500 or 600 people all the time. And in Japan, I'm just saying, Paul said, God's taught me some things. How many of you would say with me today, God's taught me a few things? Yeah, Paul said, God's taught me some things. Timothy, I've taught you those things. I've tried to teach you those things God has taught me. And now, Timothy, you teach that to other men so that those men, just like you have here, the pastor is pastor, but you have youth ministry, you have deaf ministry, you have nursing home ministry, you have Sunday school classes, What is that all about? Faithful men teaching other men. And women and children, of course. God's taught me some things. If I had a whole long time, I could go through. I learned a lot going to Africa. For one, I learned that I have to define my words biblically. That's helped me witnessing to people here. See, Muslim people that I work with, they use the same words I use, but they don't mean the same thing by any of those words. Their God's not my God. When they say prayer, they don't mean the same thing I do. When they talk about sin, they don't really believe that sin's a great big thing. It's an error. They talk about fasting. They use the same words. They don't mean the same thing. I had to learn to go back to creation and to God of the universe and define my words biblically. Do you know a lot of Americans they don't understand words we use like salvation and faith and sanctification. Anyway, I've learned that. I've learned this. Don't get too comfortable. About the time Linda and I, we're really homebodies. Nobody would believe that. We'd just soon be home with a bowl of soup and a sandwich and just be there. But God, every time we get in a ministry and just loving it, God comes along and pushes us, kicks us out of it. And I've learned not to get too comfortable. But and some other things I want to give you this morning in a hurry, I believe to be the three greatest lessons God has taught me. And I hesitate to say that because I probably should say God is still teaching me. Let me give them to you in a hurry. The first thing, I believe the top on my list of things I've learned is this. What is really important in life? What really does matter in my life? And here's the answer to that. I believe that the most important thing in the world is to know God. Now, folks, I'm not talking about knowing about God. America and most every place else in the world, they're religious countries. They know all kind of you know what religion will do for you? It'll send you straight to hell. Because religion goes around, look what I do. I pray more than you pray. I give more than you give. I can sing better than... No, I can't either. Religion goes around, look at me, boy, I'm a great guy. I've never killed anybody. I'm not as bad as... That'll send you to hell faster than anything. It's not just knowing about God. I've determined... I believe that the greatest thing in the world is to know God. Linda and I have 5 kids. This grandchild that comes will be number 17. But when our kids were growing up, we always tried to show them that knowing Christ and being saved is a lot more than just knowing some things in your mind. It's knowing God. Knowing God. Is a real person. It's not just something that, it's not just a creed that we recite. I can say, I know you're a pastor, and I'm glad I do. He's a good man and his family. But to know somebody, I can say, well, I know, I don't even know the governor of Tennessee. I mean, I know who he is. I know his name, but I don't really know Governor Haslam. But to know, it's not just knowing about God. I want to know God. And for me, I've already said the greatest joy is no, I don't have to worry about being, I am saved. If I die, if I have a heart attack right here before I finish, you know that's possible. I mean, you say, Brother God, don't be morbid. It's okay, because I'm going up. Over in China, we have church over there. They don't say goodbye. When they go out, everybody just points up. You know what that means? I may not see you down here anymore, but I'll see you. To know God. And we've always, and our kids have got this. He's a real person. He's our creator. He's our savior, but he's real, and to know God. And then along with that, watch it. Knowing God, but knowing each other and having a good family. What really is important in life for you? I tell you, for me, knowing God and having a good family. And I have a wonderful wife. We're working on this summer be 47 years together. I was just a kid when we got married. I'm serious about that. I'm not joking. I was a teenager. I was daddy before I was 20. I was grandfather before I was 40. We've enjoyed I used to think it can't get better, but it does. Our kids growing up in Africa, and please don't ever feel sorry for missionary kids. There's nothing like it. It's the greatest thing to be with mom and dad and get to be involved in ministry and see God use you. And let me give you one example of this thing. What really is important for me? We'd been on the mission field for a long time, and we were asked to leave Senegal and go down in the jungle in the Congo. And we went down there, and immediately fighting started. 10,000 foreigners fled the country. Those Christians where we live have been praying for years for the missionaries to come back. We just got there. I didn't feel like I could leave. For the next 6 months, nobody knew if we were dead or alive. A lot of churches prayed for us. This is back in the 90s. Churches prayed for us, even though I'll go to the church and they say, well, we never met you, Brother Godfrey, but we prayed for you all back in the 90s. Because we were cut off from the world. We got no money, not a penny, for 6 months. No mail for 6 months. We had two grown kids in America, one married, one in college. They didn't know we were alive. Well, the end of that 6 months came up to about Christmas time. First Christmas out in the jungle. Our Christmas there was very different. We went out the Sunday before and baptized a bunch of people in the pond down at the bottom of the mountain, walked back up and had church. But then Christmas Day came, and that Christmas there was very different from here. Number one, there was no snow. It was 90, 95 year round. They're sticky hot. There was no Santa Claus. Thank the Lord. There was no Christmas tree. We had no decorations. That year, we had some very interesting Christmas presents. One of them was a big bowl of grub worms. Fresh out of the palm tree, working around anyway. That Christmas, now listen to me, and I'll have to, you'll get this, I think. That Christmas, we had our three younger kids with us. All my kids got for Christmas that Christmas were two Walt Disney video cassettes that my mother had. When we flew out of Spartanburg-Greenville Airport, my mother gave those things to me. I stuck them in my suitcase. And so we were out in Africa, and all my kids got for Christmas that year was two video cassettes, but we were 400 miles from electricity. We didn't have TV. We didn't have a video cassette player. And you said, "Brother, oh, Brother Godfrey, isn't that awful?" No, here's what I'm telling you. You see, God underlined again to us, when we know God and we have each other, we don't need anything else in the world. What really matters to you? Well, I believe knowing God matters. Let me give you my second thing I've learned. And I'm still working on this one too, but I've learned I can trust God. Now you say, obviously, if you can live out in the jungle for months and you don't get any money, and people say, how did you live if you didn't get any money? You know what I want to say? Have y'all ever heard of God? Why do we think He's just God right here in America? But anyway, you say, obviously you can trust God if you can live out there for months and not get any money and all that. Can I say this to you? I didn't learn to trust God out there. I learned to trust God in a lot of ways. One, when I trusted Him to save me. Why do we think we can trust Him to save our soul, but we can't trust Him to do anything else for us? Well, I got saved, but let me illustrate how I learned to trust God. We had just gotten married. Some of y'all remember the days you just got married and you didn't have any money. And we moved from South Carolina to Chattanooga, Tennessee to attend Tennessee Temple University in the old dispensation, all right? And we took everything we had in this little U-Haul trailer that you could pull behind a car. And my car was a 1962 Plymouth Valiant. And that was the ugliest car that was ever made. I paid $117 for it and got taken. It was not in good shape, and I just got out of the Marine Corps. We didn't have any money, and had a baby, and so we loaded everything we had. Now, I was, young missionaries, they're dumb as gourds. They just don't know. They're not lacking intelligence. They've just never been there, never done it, and so we moved over there. I wasn't enrolled in school. I didn't know anybody. I didn't have a job. I don't know what I thought. We just knew we were going to go. We took off and went over there, and we rented a. They had these big old houses there near Highland Park Baptist Church that were one time big houses, and they made four apartments out of them, three rooms in a row. We rented one of those, paid the last money we had to get that apartment. Well, I went to a bus pastor's meeting the first weekend, started running a bus route at Highland Park. And the university sent me down to this factory to apply for a job. So I went down there and I applied, and they talked with me, and they found out I was an electronics tech. I was a radar man in the Marines. They gave me a test and they said, "We would like to hire you. But we noticed on your application, you checked that you don't want to work on Sunday." And I said, "Well, now listen, sir, I know some people have to work on Sunday, and it's okay, but I'm a Bible college student. I run a bus route. I want to be in church. I didn't come over here just to work. Now I need a job. I'll work hard for you, but I don't feel like I could sign that, check that." And this man looked at me, and here's what he said. He said, "Now, young man, I'm a Christian too." Have you ever heard that? And he said, "The Bible says that if the ox falls in the ditch on the Sabbath, you're supposed to get it out." And I don't know what made me say this, but I said, "Sir, if I had an ox and it fell in the ditch every Sunday, I'd shoot that thing." And you're laughing, but he saw no humor in that at all. And I didn't get a job. He didn't think that was funny. Have you ever walked out of something like that thinking, "What an idiot I am"? I mean, I got a wife, I got a baby, I want to get in school, I got school bill to pay. I need a job, but I didn't get the job. I went home and I told Linda, and the university sent me down to another place. It was Ringo Junior High School, a public junior high school down in Catoosa County, Georgia. And I went down there and applied for the job, and the principal said, "Have you ever done any work like this?" I said, "Sir, I've never done it, but look, I'm a Bible college student, and God's called me to be a missionary. If you'll hire me, I will work hard for you." And he said, "I believe you will." And he gave me the job. Then he told me that I'd be working for Catoosa County, Georgia, and I would only get paid once a month, which meant I had to work a month before I got paid. I got back my little Valiant and driving up I-75 and talking to the Lord. "Lord, I thank you for giving me the job. I've been praying and you gave it to me, but Lord, you know I got a wife. And Lord, you know I got a little baby boy and they both like to eat. And Lord, you know we don't have any money. We spent our last money renting that apartment. Lord, you know I don't have any money." I went to work the next day and I did maintenance and I cleaned the rooms. And I went in the cafeteria to clean it. And these ladies that the cooked and took care of the cafeteria, I called them granny ladies. Thinking about that, they probably were in their 40s. I was a young guy. Anyway, I went in there and they knew who I was already, and they looked at me and they said, "Now, Brother Godfrey, it's against the state regulations for us to serve this food over again. We just have to throw it out every day, and they take it, I often feed it to pigs or whatever." They said, "If you want us to, we'll leave the food in the pots and pans and casseroles, and you get what you want, and then you can throw the rest out." And I want you to listen to me. For 4 years, I fed half of my block at Tennessee Temple University. I don't mean bread and water. I went home with gallon jugs full of black-eyed peas, fried chicken, yeast rolls, banana pudding. We would eat all we could eat, and I'd go up down the street and other married students, and I'd give out. You know, I'm having fun, but I'm illustrating my point. You know what we were learning? We can trust Him. Can I tell you today, you can trust Him? Can I say, if you're here today and you're not saved, that's all you have to do is trust Him. He died for you. He paid the price. It is a complete atonement. And if you trust Him to save your soul, but folk, not only will He save your soul, He will take care of every need you have. And that we learn we can trust Him. Let me give you my last thing we've learned. It's kind of connected to that. Because we've learned we can trust Him, we've learned we cannot give Him. This whole thing about giving, I hope that you never look at giving to missions as something, it's some great task you have to do. If you don't do it, God's going to beat you over the head. Folk, if that's the way you feel about it, you don't get it. If I can trust Him to save my soul, trust Him to take care of my needs, trust Him to provide for my family, trust Him to take care of my wife and my kids, and we lived out in some of the wildest places, but we had snakes everywhere, crocodiles in the river. I mean, if I can trust God to take care of us out there, why don't I understand I can give to Him and He'll take care of me? Yeah, let me illustrate it. I could do that personally, but let me just, a couple little short stories and I'm finished. I wish you could go with me to the Congo. Now, I've already told you I was back there last year. It was one of the most emotional times of my life, as these people were coming up and saying, Pastor Jonas, they called me. Pastor Jonas, you won me to Christ. Whew. Oh, I cried like a baby. Pastor, you baptized me down there in the pond. But I wish y'all could go with me out there and watch them take their offering. They don't have money hardly. In fact, back when we lived there, we had 38,000% inflation in 1 year. Money went from having value to nothing. It went from 100 bills to 10,000 bills to 100,000 bills to 1 million bills to 5 million bills in the 3 years we were there. They didn't have what they had. We lit fires with the old money. It wasn't worth anything. But they didn't pass a plate at offering time. They didn't pass a plate. Over in Japan, they have a sock on the end of a stick and they pass it down the road and you put your money in the sock. You're not expecting much to do that. But that's not the way they did it out in the Congo. All the way across the altar in front of the church with these big, huge woven baskets. And when offering time came, the song leader would stand up. He was like your song leader. He was animated. Everybody stand up. They loved to sing there. Services lasted 3 or 4 or 5 hours. But he would say, stand up. And our church was different. All the mamas sat on this side. And all the papas sat on this side. They called every female a mama. Mama Liddy. Mama whatever her name was. Even my little boy was Papa Robert. And but everybody would stand up and they would start singing and they were just beaming with joy. And then those rows of mamas, one row at a time, started out. And they would come out and Africans, you know, they can't stand still. So they got this it's a little different. They'd come forward and they'd walk around the front of the church and come down at those baskets. And one of them would have a handful of eggs. One of them have a bowl full of mantete. That's like a watermelon seed that's dry and you have to break every one of them. One of them have some cassava. One of them have a pineapple. Another one have a hand of bananas. And every once in a while one would come out and she had a chicken. A live chicken, I'm talking about. Now these baskets are filling up and every row of those ladies came out and smiling and beaming and put their offerings in. When all the ladies finished, then all the kids came. And the kids would put their offerings in the baskets. And then the first row of papas, all these men would start out. And they would come up and they'd put their bananas and their pineapple and their corn and whatever they had and put in their chicken. Every once in a while, one of them would have a goat. And then I would get up to preach. Cluck, 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 cluck. Bah, bah. Have you ever tried to preach over that? I mean, listen to what I'm saying. You know what they learned? You can't outgive God. I've never seen an offering in America like they did. Now I mean by that, they just smiled and beamed and praised the Lord. They were able to put in their pineapple or their bananas or their chicken or whatever they had. And by the way, that chicken might have been more worth to them than our whole last week's salary for us. One more story. I love the Philippines. I've seen people say from one end of the Philippines to the other, I can go out there and spend a month and win more people to Christ than the rest of the year here. But I was out there preaching in a missions conference like this one, and one of the other speakers was a Filipino pastor, and his church is on the island of Negros, and it's very poor there. They grow sugar cane, and they can't get any money for it anymore. But anyway, His church is down in a rice paddy. And you have to walk out on this little dike out across the rice paddy to get to the church. And his people will walk for an hour or two down out of the mountain. Can you imagine what if people in Lisbon City had to walk an hour to church? I wonder how many would be here. And out there it's sticky, hot. And anyway, he was telling me, Pastor Le Baton, he said, Brother Godfrey, one Sunday I stood up to preach, and as I was preaching, I looked out, and one of my faithful older ladies was not in her place. Now, you understand, don't you, that if you're not here, Pastor knows it. Because y'all sit in the same place every time you come back. Well, he looked up and that lady wasn't there. Next Sunday, he didn't think too much about it that first Sunday, but the next Sunday he came back. He stood up preaching, looked at it, and she still wasn't there. Well, he became a little concerned, so he told one of the deacons, and the deacon walked way up this mountain to see this lady, and he came back and he said, Pastor, Mom, I forgot her last name, he told me, but Mom so-and-so, she's very ill. Her feet are swollen. She's got heart troubles. She's not doing too good. So Pastor Rabaton, he took two things with him. He took his Bible and he took a song, a hymn book. You know, there's in a good hymn book, there's a lot of doctrine. And he went up there, he walked up the mountain to see this lady, and he went in her house and he opened up the hymn book and they sang some hymns together. He prayed with her. He opened up his Bible. He read some verses from the Bible to her. And he gave her a little challenge. And then he said, Mom, I'm sorry, but I've got to go back down to my church now. And she looked at him and she said, Pastor, you're forgetting something. He said, Mom, what am I forgetting? She said, Pastor, my tithe and my faith promise offering. He said, Mom, you can't do that. You're sick. You need to go to the doctor. She said, Pastor, don't be cruel to me. I wonder when we all stand, if we're saved, at the judgment seat of Christ, who's going to get the rewards? I tend to think it may be some little lady up on the side of a mountain that nobody much has ever heard of. They may be at the head of the line. Have we learned that knowing Him is more important than anything else in the world? Trusting Him is important. And if we can trust Him, we can't outgive Him. Your pastor, we would never stand and say anything to you about giving to missions if we didn't believe it, and not just believe it, but practice it. I would never stand in this pulpit and tell you that you ought to give to help get these missionaries to the field if I did not do it. Every year we go, I'll be preaching in my own church in April, and I'll challenge our people there to give, and then my wife and I, as we do every year, we'll increase ours, and we've been doing it a long time. I'm simply saying, folks, you understand, knowing God, what really does matter for us, having a wonderful family, trust in Him. I may say this again tonight, but I'm going to say it anyway. Spurgeon says, faith is reason at rest in God. I like that. Rest. You know what it means to rest? Last year, by this time, I had two kidney stones. One was half an inch. I was in agony. Sometimes the only time I could get a little relief was to sit in my Lazy Boy. And I wasn't totally out of pain then, but I'd sit in that Lazy Boy and just lie back in that thing and just rest. And I didn't have to worry about it collapsing on me. You know, that's when I think about salvation, it doesn't depend on what I do and who I am. It depends on who He is and what He did. And I can rest in that. And I hope you know that. I hope you know that in a real way in your life. I hope you know that you're saved. And I hope that you know you can trust Him with every aspect of your life. Dear Lord, help us today to trust You fully, and Lord, to give according to that trust. And I thank you. I thank you for this wonderful church. Thank you for their kindness, their hospitality, their love for missions and missionaries. And I pray that you would bless them. But Lord, if there's one person here today or more, they're not sure they're saved, I pray today that would be taken care of. Lord, those who've been holding back and not trusting you fully, I pray that today they would understand they can trust you with all their hearts. And we just ask you would work in our lives in Jesus' name, preacher.